May it please the Court, Ryan Farrell on behalf of Appellant Robert Matus. And I'd like to say good morning and happy Valentine's Day. To give you a quick intro to this case, my client, Mr. Matus, a California consumer, purchased defendant's product, Vidox, in California in San Bernardino County. He, in San Bernardino County, relied on their website advertising. In San Bernardino County, he consumed the Vidox, and in San Bernardino County, he did not receive the benefits or was injured by the Vidox product.
You've got that Mavericks case, a Ninth Circuit case, that basically says only a website is not enough. It's not an interactive website. There was no evidence that it was. And it says you need, quote, something more. So what something more do you present for jurisdiction?
Your Honor, and I'll get to that right away. In fact, because first, before we get to that, let's
see. Could you speak into the mic, please?
Sure. I'll get to that right away. But first, what we have is we have no dispute regarding the intentional act. That was done under the district court.
I think you should answer the question.
No, I'm going to. The issue then is...
No, not later.
Okay, I'll answer it now.
Okay.
The issue then of the website is where the judge found that there was the arise out of issue. And the judge said that without more information regarding the website or specifically being related to that website at California, then that did not
look,
do
this,
that.
This seems to be the problem here. There was a website. They did sell things, but they didn't sell it to him.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So as far as he's concerned, the only thing he's relying on is having seen some information on a website.
He's relying on the efficacy claims.
I'm sorry?
He's relying on the efficacy claims made regarding the product.
So it's just reading a website. So whether it was interactive, whether it sold stuff, is irrelevant as to him.
For the most part, yeah. I mean, here's the real issue on this. This, unfortunately, as a plaintiff's class action attorney, I'm not thrilled by the Bristol-Myers Squibb case, and that case being 137 SCT 1773 that just recently came out, discussing specific jurisdiction. And that's what we're here before. That's what we're here about. However, that is the seminal case now regarding specific jurisdiction. And if we go to that case and acknowledge that in the Squibb case, they're talking about Plavix, a pill that was not sold by the defendant. It was sold by resellers. It was advertised by the defendant. There was a national campaign similar to here where defendant admits in its own briefing that is attached, and I can give the citation, that they advertise to the world, that they're a worldwide company advertising the world, well known to the world. Okay? What the Bristol-Myers Squibb case says, and I'm going to read a number of quotes, and feel free to jump in at any point, but at 1778, it says, BMS did not develop Plavix, BMS being Squibb, did not develop Plavix in California, did not create a marketing strategy for Plavix in California, and did not manufacture, label, package, or work on the regulatory approval of the product in California. BMS instead engaged in all of these activities in either New York or New Jersey, but BMS does sell Plavix in California. Between 2006 and 2012, it sold almost 187 million Plavix pills in the state and took in more than 900 million from those sales. Citation admitted. This amounts to a little over 1% of the company's...
But they didn't sell these. In this case, whatever they are, the additives or whatever they are, were not sold by them to anybody in California.
Correct. We're talking about the BMS case.
Does Bristol-Myers alter our analysis in Mavericks?
Anything in that disagrees with Bristol-Myers at this point does. Bristol-Myers supersedes
okay,
that.
Okay, well, I'm asking you a question. Is our decision in Mavericks now inconsistent with Bristol-Myers?
I don't have an answer to that, Your Honor. I don't know.
Okay, then let's assume that Mavericks is still good law. You still haven't answered Judge Woodcock's question. What's the something more?
Let's go back to what the something more is that it's advertised to everyone. Under that rubric that the judge in the underlying case did, there would be no state that would have specific jurisdiction in this case.
No, that's not true. You can sue them in Georgia.
No, but that would be general jurisdiction.
Right.
It could be general jurisdiction.
So what?
But that's the point. The argument we're talking about would vitiate specific jurisdiction.
And so what?
But that's not what Bristol-Myers Squibb from the Supreme Court
says. What does Bristol-Myers Squibb say? That everybody's entitled to have one state where they get specific jurisdiction?
No, what Bristol-Myers Squibb says regarding specific jurisdiction on page 1780 of Bristol-Myers Squibb is Specific jurisdiction is very different. In order for a state court to exercise specific jurisdiction, the suit must arise out of or relate.
I know what specific jurisdiction is. I don't think there's anything in Bristol-Myers that's breaking new law on this. So what difference does that make? Your client could have sued them in Georgia.
That's
yes,
correct.
You would have a good argument for general jurisdiction, but it would also be an argument for specific jurisdiction. That's where they manufactured the product that injured him.
The injury, though, for specific jurisdiction, as outlined in Bristol-Myers Squibb, is where the injury took place.
But the injury here is not actually the product, is it? It's the advertising.
It's the advertising.
But the advertising...
took place in Georgia.
No, the advertising was created in Georgia. The advertising, similar to Plavix, was viewed in California.
Okay. Your rule, then, would be any place you view the advertising, you have specific jurisdiction. Is that the rule you want us to adopt?
The rule that I would have you adopt is the rule from Bristol-Myers Squibb, which is any place where a plaintiff suffers injury from a product such as this is where specific jurisdiction lies.
Any place where there is injury?
Any place where the resident plaintiff suffers injury from the product is where the
specific
jurisdiction
lies. But this isn't the
product.
This is, again, the injury here isn't from the product.
I would say the injury is from the product. The injury is from purchasing the product in California, viewing the website.
The purchase had nothing to do with, as I understand it. I mean, it only had to do with the defendant insofar as they put it into commerce and sold it to somebody else, as far as we know, not in California.
That they admit that they put it into commerce and that they sell in California. It's irrelevant.
They sell in California, but they didn't sell to him in California.
But that's irrelevant. Plavix did not sell. Bristol-Myers Squibb did not sell directly to any of the in-state residents in the Bristol-Myers Squibb case.
And they didn't have jurisdiction, so I don't know.
No. The non-residents did not have jurisdiction. The residents absolutely had jurisdiction, and in fact, Bristol-Myers Squibb stands for the fact that those non-residents.
But Plavix, we don't. And what didn't come up because it wasn't really what the case was about. But Plavix could have sold to retailers, presumably did in California, who then sold to the individual. But here, the distributor, the manufacturer didn't, or at least there's no allegation that the person that they sold to anybody in California, including a retailer. Right?
But that's admitted in the documents that the defendant itself sells to California.
Right, but they didn't sell. But the product that got to your client, there's no California connection.
Well, no, the California connection is the injury. The injury occurred in California, similar to Plavix.
Counsel, the rule you've just adopted would undo an awful lot of cases, including Supreme Court cases. It would just undo all of our – if all we have to do is look at the place of injury, that is going to be a reversal of, 100 years worth of jurisdictional cases.
Basically, every single jurisdiction in the entire United States has jurisdiction over this claim.
Only where a resident
someone
is injured.
A resident is injured.
Exactly. Same
so
with Plavix.
So every single place that a resident is injured has jurisdiction.
For that resident, absolutely.
That's an extraordinary extension of the doctrine, as I understand it.
That's exactly what Plavix says.
I'm sorry. Could you tell us where that is?
That's what Bristol-Myers says?
Oh, sorry. You're right.
Where?
That's what I missed.
But where? Tell us where.
Okay. Let's go right into – let me find it for you. Because it talks about the third party in Bristol-Myers – or in the Squibb case. Okay. On 1781 – and I'll read the entire paragraph. The state Supreme – starts, the present case illustrates the danger of the California approach. The state Supreme Court found that specific jurisdiction was present without identifying any adequate link between the state and the non-residence claims. As noted, the non-residents were not prescribed Plavix in California, did not purchase Plavix in California, did not ingest Plavix in California, and were not injured by Plavix in California. The mere fact the other plaintiffs – the California plaintiffs were prescribed, obtained, and ingested Plavix in California and allegedly sustained the same injuries as did the non-residents, does not allow the state to assert specific jurisdiction over the non-residents' claims. As we have explained, a defendant's relationship with a third party, that would be...
But first of all, this is only saying what isn't so, not what is so. But if you assume that it means that the plaintiffs, the resident people could sue... In this case, in Bristol-Myers, the injury was the ingestion, right? There was something wrong. This was going to hurt you. Eating it was going to hurt you, right? So if they ate it in California, if they put it in their mouth, it hurt them, was the allegation. That's not your allegation. This product itself isn't hurting you. It just isn't doing what you read on the website.
However, in the Bristol-Myers Squibb case, the advertising was that it would not hurt you, that it would do this same thing.
Okay.
So we're in the same place in that it's the advertising that did not turn out to be correct in the Bristol-Myers Squibb case. This would not hurt you.
Was that a false advertising case?
Was the underlying?
Yeah.
I don't know, Your Honor. I'm sorry. However, I do want to go on that because it says, and this is the third party, this is the California residents. As we've explained, a defendant's relationship with a third party, the California residents, alone is insufficient basis for jurisdiction. This remains true even when third parties, the California plaintiffs, here the plaintiffs who reside in California, can bring claims similar to those brought by non-residents.
We've read it. I understand what it doesn't say affirmatively that these other people could bring the case. But even if they could, they're assuming they could, but they're not really deciding they could. But nonetheless, the assumption here is that these pills, when you take them in California, are injuring you. The pills are injuring you.
Well,
that's not your claim.
The loss of money is the injury, which was spent in California.
But that wasn't to the defendant. It wasn't the defendant. I mean, indirectly he got the money, but he didn't sell it in California. He had nothing to do with it being sold in California to your client, right?
That's correct. Let's take the hypothetical then. A company like Iovate, a Canadian company that sells Hydroxycut, they sell it through Walmart. Under this rubric that we're talking about right now, they could only be...
Because if Plavix, if the defendant had sold it to Walmart in California, and Walmart in California has sold it to your client, we'd have a different situation. But in this instance, there's no indication that the defendant sold it to anybody in California.
No, the defendant admits that it has...
Well, they sold it to different people, but not in the line that got to your client.
Yes, they admit they sell it to 9 resellers, and that one of those resellers sold it to my client.
Right, but not because they sold it to anybody in California.
But that's the difference. Iovate sells to Walmart. Where they sell it is up to Walmart. And so if we were to take that cut...
Because they're not selling it to Walmart for California, just Walmart in general, that may be. That may not be enough.
That's the case. If we're going that route, then a company like Iovate, a Canadian company, could never be held liable in a California court.
Well, it could be held liable if their product was perhaps dangerous and hurting somebody, but that's not the claim here.
I don't think there's a distinction there, Your Honor. Simply because the product is dangerous or not doesn't change the fact that the injury in fact is the loss of money, and the injury in fact occurred in California.
I don't think the injury in fact is loss of money if you take something and it injures you. That's not the injury. The injury is the injury.
Yeah, but I think it's a distinction without real meaning there in the fact that it's still, and the injury occurred in California. Whether it's a physical injury or a loss of money, the injury, which determines specific jurisdiction, occurred in California.
All right, if you want to reserve time, your time is
up. I do, please, Your Honor. Thank you.
Your Honors, may it please the Court, my name is Jeffrey Peel. I'm the attorney for Premium Nutraceuticals, the appellee in this case. This, as I said in my brief, Robert Matus is a unicorn, and I think that has a specific bearing on this case. One thing that a company that interacts in interstate commerce needs to be able to do is to have commercially reliable standards upon which to act. In this particular case, the fact record shows out that Premium Nutraceuticals goes out of its way to not be hailed into court into California.
Do you sell through your website to California?
Yes, my client, Premium Nutraceuticals, right, sells through their website.
And yes, if somebody buys it through their website in California, I think in your brief you at least at some point assumed that there would be jurisdiction as to the person who actually bought it in California through the website.
I think absolutely there would be jurisdiction.
Certainly have a contract action that you'd have brought in California.
Yes, you'd have some sort of contract action in that case. However, if you look at what Premium Nutraceuticals actually does, is they have a very strict arbitration clause and class action waiver. So while they do market in California, and they have a 100% money-back guarantee, so they say to all of their clients, yes, we want to avail ourselves of the California market, but if you purchase from us, before you purchase it, you have to agree to arbitrate any dispute. And if you have a problem, we'll give you all your money back. And the record in this case actually bears out that Premium Nutraceuticals honors that. On page 178 of the record, you're going to find the declaration of Joseph Testino, the company's CEO, where he says that he's issued just in the year alone $624,323 in refunds to customers throughout the country who have basically made the claims plaintiff had that, well, you know, this product doesn't do what they say it's supposed to do. So in this particular case, if you look to the Walden, and I might say the name wrong, Walden versus Fiore case, the court is very clear that due process requires that a defendant be hailed into court in a forum state based on his own affiliation with that state, not based on the random, fortuitous, or attenuated contacts he makes by interacting with other persons affiliated with the state. In this particular case, Premium, like as I mentioned previously, has decided that in its interaction with California, it wants to be very limited. You know, with all due respect to the, you know, honorable courts of the state of California, they don't want to be here. They want to market their products, but they want to do so in a way that limits their ability to be hailed into court, and they do it legally pursuant to the Federal Arbitration Act and other things along
those
lines.
What's your take on Bristol-Myers?
My take on the Bristol-Myers, I'd actually highlighted a quote from it. Bristol-Myers says explicitly, even regularly occurring sales of a product in a state do not justify the exercise of jurisdiction over a claim unrelated to those sales. Now, in the district court, I was on the verge of, I did not, but I was on the verge of basically conceding purposeful direction. Luckily, Judge Pregerson stopped me. And he said, well, don't do that. He kind of insinuated that he's willing to do it because I really hung my hat on the concept of arises out of. Under the analysis, you have to show purposeful direction and that the claim arises out of. And my argument in this case was always one of causation. We did not sell to Robert Mateus. Premium Nutraceuticals marketed to one of its independent resellers. And when I used the phrase earlier, not the phrase, the word, the unicorn specifically, if you look at the statistics, Premium Nutraceuticals nationwide sales only 1.4%.
I don't know why that matters. I don't understand that one very well. I mean, if the if this was this hypothetical person we talked about before who actually purchased through your website, what difference would it make if he was the only one in California?
I don't think it would matter.
Right. So I don't understand what difference these numbers make.
Well, part of the analysis requires applying the Asahi fairness factors. You know, if I'm remembering back to civil procedure appropriately, you have this concept of is a litigant on notice? Can they reasonably be anticipated that they're going to be hailed into court in that foreign jurisdiction? And I brought up the statistics not because I thought it was, you know, definitive, but I think if we get to that portion of the analysis, which I don't think we do, but if we get there, we see that you have a company that says 1.4% of its total sales are in California, and of those 1.4%, only 1.9% are attributable to the resellers. So you're talking, and this is not a fact that's not in the record, this particular statistic, but you're talking about 75 to 100 people that might fit into this category.
Really, for specific jurisdiction purposes, I don't understand why it matters.
It's purely the fairness factor. I mean, at the end of the day, the
fairness factor.
The fairness factor, the third element.
Why would that make a difference in specific jurisdiction?
Well, in specific jurisdiction, the third element is that, you know, elements of fair play and substantial justice.
If you had the minimum contacts, if you had otherwise satisfied the purposely availed and minimum contacts, then what would be unfair about hailing them into California?
I think in this particular case, what would be unfair is that there would be no reasonable expectation that they would be coming into California because their other sales are bound by this arbitration clause and are bound by this class action waiver. So just because there might be this errant side stream where there's...
But if this errant side stream person can trace had somehow managed to buy it from, suppose they managed to bought one where they forgot to put the arbitration clause in, and he's the only person in the in California. If they had bought it from them, you still have the same problem. If he's the only one, I think we should get off this. It doesn't make sense to me.
Yes, Your Honor, I think that's right. I mean, as Your Honor's pointed out, Judge Woodcock, you know, brought up this question of something more, and I think that was something that the district court really hung its hat on in this particular case, that there is not that something more. We have two different fact patterns. We have the people who are purchasing it through resellers, and then this website that's supposedly creating jurisdiction.
Is the website interactive at all?
The website that Premium has, yes, I would say it's interactive, yes.
It is interactive.
Meaning it actually sells things.
Yeah, you can go to today, Vidox.com.
And you'd be buying directly from your Premium Nutraceuticals.
Yes, I mean, you'd be a customer directly at
that point. So it's interactive in that sense that you can buy stuff. Okay, is it interactive in the are you going to end up with pop-ups on the side?
That I don't know. I know that there is and I don't know how much of this is in the record, but I do know that when you purchase, that when you click, a screen pops up and says, bear in mind, if you've made a purchase, you're binding yourself to these terms.
So does the webmaster have any way of identifying what region of the country or what state you're from? When you go to the website,
when you just look at it,
I think I don't want to speak out of turn. I know that that fact is not in the record, but I believe that there probably is some way that they can. I know that in this particular case, what is in the record is in the declaration of Joseph Testino. He states that he has this Limelight's customer relationship management software, where he can identify every person who's ever entered information on his website.
Okay, but you actually have to enter some information. So it takes some action on behalf of the viewer.
That's
not,
correct.
Not strictly passive. So what I'm trying to get at is if you go to this website and the webmaster can identify that you're from California, are you going to get any special testimonials or something tailored to customers in California?
I believe the answer to that question would be no. Part of Premium's model on their website and on their terms of condition page, they really wanted to limit their litigation to Georgia to the best of their ability.
Well, but that's a different problem. But for example, with many websites, if you go on them just to look at something, they'll start sending you emails saying, oh, I got one recently and I wrote a nasty note back. I see you looked at this. Why are you interested? Is there anything like that going on here?
Only if the customer requests it. So if the customer were to go on, or the viewer, and say, you know, I am interested in this product, send me more information, they can enter their information.
Do that. So in other words, it's interactive, not only in a sense you can buy things, but that you can ask, can you ask questions on it?
I don't know if you can ask questions. I know some websites now, they have these bots where they're like fake people that will talk to you, you know, in a chat window. I don't believe Premium.
But they're actually real people, I hope. But anyway, go ahead.
They do a good job, you know, assimilating real people. But I don't believe the website has that. In this particular case, and a couple.
What was the something more in brand, in Mavericks?
In Mavericks, I think the something more in that particular case was the nature of the tort itself. I'm answering your question, so don't think I'm changing gears here. This came up in I believe it was Bristol Myers versus Squibb. They actually talk about how the nature of the tort itself was really unique in this particular case. And when they go through Calder and all these other things, they talk about libel. And they say one of the elements of libel is the dissemination of something that's false. And so the tort occurs when the person reads it. When you open up the paper and you read the libelous statement about something, that's where the tort has occurred. And they said, you know, a lot of this case law is relatively unique because we have this really weird tort that we're focusing on where the injury is kind of disassociated from the actual dissemination, or from the actual defendant. And so the something more, I believe, in Mavericks was something along those lines. They said what we have here is someone put together some copyrighted photographs, and they were trying to market these photographs, and then here comes this company, and they put our copyrighted photographs out there, and all of a sudden we've lost value. So their diminished value kind of comes along with the dissemination. I don't believe that occurred in this case. I mean, and the distinction is on reading versus relying. That quote, I'm sorry, it wasn't Bristol-Myers Squibb. I'm sorry, just to correct your honors, that, myself, that was in Walden versus Fiore. And the exact quote is, the strength of that connection was largely a function of the nature of the libel tort. However scandalous a newspaper article might be, it can lead to a loss of reputation only if communicated to and read and understood by third persons. So in this particular case, I don't believe that, you know, we're going down that path where we have this bizarre tort. What we have is Mr. Mattu saying he was injured by Premium, but Premium wasn't involved in that injury in any way, shape, or form. I mean, setting aside the fact...
Well, wait a minute. Premium was involved because Premium made the representations, including on its website.
Premium made representations about the efficacy of its product on its website. I mean,
but what do you mean by it wasn't involved? It was involved.
Maybe it's my own personal bias. I'm just skeptical of the claim that someone goes on this website, does all this research, and then finds some third-party vendor to purchase it from. If you're on the website, buy it there.
That's not true in general. I mean, these days, if you will routinely go and look, see if you can get a better price somewhere else.
But you start
with the manufacturer.
And I think it would have been nice to have these facts. At the end of the day, it is the plaintiff's burden to establish jurisdiction, and we kind of wanted that. I know at one point in the reply brief, the appellant accuses the appellee, me, of being relatively cagey with some facts, but I think at the end of the day, we were really kind of frustrated by the fact.
Basically what you're saying, because in brand, I mean, they didn't really, I guess they sold some California-specific advertising. But Mavericks, I mean. But mainly, and I guess you said this, it was a defamation action. Is that what it was?
I think that one was, I think it would have been kind of a trademark action in that case.
Okay.
Like a trademark or a patent. A trademark in this particular case. They had copyrighted
it. It was copyright.
They copyrighted these photographs and someone was stealing their copyright. And that actually gets to a lot of the case law that the appellant cited revolves around these copyright actions and trademark actions and things like that. I pointed this out in my brief. You know, when I disseminate a product that violates some sort of copyright or trademark, that tort occurs as soon as the person sees that. That's not the nature of California's false and misleading advertising torts.
Is that true? Doesn't a tort occur when you copy it?
The tort occurs, I believe, when the
damage
person relies.
You may count up how many people saw it, but the tort is the copying.
I think the tort under the false advertising law in California requires that the person actually purchase the product and establish that it did not behave in the manner that it was claimed to behave. So, you know, the risk of. Maybe I won't go down that road. I mean, this is a male enhancement pill, and so Mr. Mattis's claim is basically something akin to it. He was not enhanced in any way. And so the tort occurs once that the product does not do what he says it does at that point. So I guess I see that I'm getting short on time. So what I would say kind of the main thrust of what the appellees were trying to establish here is the arises out of prong. And this has firm precedent in the Burger King case and several other cases from the Supreme Court and recently. The fact is, Premium Nutraceuticals did not market this product to Mr. Mattis. And so the jurisdiction that is specific to this transaction, the factors that are relevant to this transaction and jurisdictional analysis simply do not apply. The other thing I'll point out simply because I'm getting short on time, it is Valentine's Day, and my wife, Hillary Lenspiel, who's an attorney, helped me draft my brief. She's infinitely smarter than me, so I wanted it to be public record that I wished her a happy Valentine's Day. I believe I'll conclude with that, Your Honors.
Thank you very much. Yes, sir.
Excuse me, Your Honor. There are just three brief things that I'd like to address. First, Appellee just made the claim that they don't market their product to California. However, in their own briefing on page 214 of the record, paragraph 18, at line 18 through 22, it says plaintiff, and that would be appellee, has exhausted countless resources spreading its brand across the U.S. and the world. Vidox is endorsed by PGA Tour professionals Mark Calcavecchia and Brian Gay. Vidox is also the primary sponsor of NASCAR number 66,
In addition to the resources spent securing these endorsements for the brand, Premium Nutraceuticals also exhausts significant resources marketing Vidox online and on television. So yes, it was marketed to every state and to the entire world. Now going back to what we discussed, I'd like to just point out a few cases. In the Starlight International case versus Lifeguard Health, LLC, and this is Northern District, California, July 22, 2008, 2008 U.S. District Lexus 58927, it states, when a merchant seeks the benefit of engaging in unlimited interstate commerce over the Internet, it runs the risk of being subject to the process of the courts of those states. The second case I'd like to cite is the Bridgestone case, and it says, the Bridgestone, this is 99 Calap 4th at 777. It states, the second appellate court concluded that a manufacturer's placement of goods in the stream of commerce with the expectation that they will be purchased or used by consumers in California indicates an intention to serve the California market directly or indirectly, and constitutes purposeful availment of the income earned by the manufacturer from sale or use of its products in California is substantial. The fact of the matter, Your Honors, is this was marketed towards California as it was marketed towards every state. The only way to find that there is not specific jurisdiction here in California is to find that the only place there would be jurisdiction is in Georgia. And with that, that is not the law of Bristol-Myers Squibb that was just recently put out by the Supreme Court.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Your Honors. I appreciate your time. Have a wonderful day.
The case of Mattis versus Premium Nutraceuticals is submitted. We'll go to Rakonik versus Delta Family Care.